So, I had my answer, and it was that the English were not planning an assault, but rather hoped to starve Snottingham into surrender. I dared not carry that answer straight back to the town, not while Beorker and Alfred were so close to me. And so I stayed and listened as Beorker prayed with the prince, and then when Alfred was calm, the two moved back to the tent and went inside. And I went back. It took a long time, but no one saw me. I was a true Scheidegängen that night, moving among the shadows like a spectre, climbing the hill to the town until I could run the last 100 paces. And I called Ragnar's name, and the gate creaked open, and I was back in Snottingham. Ragnar took me to see Ubba when the sun rose, and to my surprise, Wayland was there, Wayland the snake. And he gave me a sour look, though not so sour as the scowl on Ubba's dark face. "So, what did you do?" he growled. "I saw no ladders," I began. "What did you do?" Ubba snarled. And so I told my tale from the beginning, how I had crossed the fields and had thought I was being followed and had dodged like a hare, then gone through the barricade and spoken to the sentry. Ubba stopped me there and looked at Wayland.
"Well?"
Wayland nodded. "I saw him through the barricade, Lord. Heard him speak to a man." Sir Wayland had followed me. I looked at Ragnar, who shrugged. "My Lord Ubba wanted a second man to go," he explained, "and Wayland offered." Wayland gave me a smile, the kind of smile the devil might give a bishop entering hell. "I could not get through the barrier, Lord," he told Ubba.
"But you saw the boy go through?"
"And heard him speak to the sentry, Lord, though what he said I could not tell."
"Did you see ladders?"
Ubba asked Wayland.
"No, Lord, but I only skirted the fence."
Ubba stared at Wayland, making him uncomfortable, then transferred his dark eyes to me and made me uncomfortable.
"So, you got through the barrier," he said. "So what did you see?"
I told him how I had found the large tent, and of the conversation I had overheard, how Alfred had wept because he had sinned, and how he had wanted to attack the town, and how the priest had said that God would starve the Danes if that was his will. And Ubba believed me, because he reckoned a boy could not make up the story of the servant girl and the prince. Besides, I was amused, and it showed. Alfred, I thought, was a pious weakling, a weeping penitent, a pathetic nothing. And even Ubba smiled as I described the sobbing prince and the earnest priest.
"So," Ubba asked me, "no ladders?"
"I saw none, Lord."
He stared at me with that fearsomely bearded face, and then to my astonishment, he took off one of his arm rings and tossed it to me. "You're right," he told Ragnar. "He is a Dane."
"He's a good boy," Ragnar said.
"Sometimes the mongrel you find in the field turns out to be useful," Ubba said, then beckoned to an old man who'd been sitting on a stool in the room's corner.
The old man was called Storri, and like Ravan, he was a skald, but also a sorcerer, and Ubba would do nothing without his advice. And now, without saying a word, Storri took a sheaf of thin white sticks, each the length of a man's hand, and he held them just above the floor, muttered a prayer to Odin, then let them go. They made a small clattering noise as they fell, and then Storri leaned forward to look at the pattern they made. They were rune sticks. Many Danes consulted the rune sticks, but Storri's skill at reading the signs was famous, and Ubba was a man so riddled with superstition that he would do nothing unless he believed the gods were on his side.
"Well?"
he asked impatiently. Storri ignored Ubba. Instead, he stared at the score of sticks, seeing if he could detect a rune letter or a significant pattern in their random scatter.